Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Sex Offender Registration and the Constitution Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 17, 2013, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in United States v. Cabuto. The case involves the constitutionality of certain provisions of the Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act, or SORNA, of 2006, which created both a direct federal requirement for sex offenders to register and a federal penalty for failing to register. The case considers whether a federal court of appeals erred in, first, operating on the premise that Kidabo was not under a federal registration obligation until SORNA was enacted, and second, concluding that Congress lacked the power under Article 1 of the Constitution to apply SORNA's registration requirement and penalty to a former sex offender like Kidabo, who is no longer in government custody or on supervised release. To discuss the case, we have Randy Barnett, who is the Carmack Waterhouse Professor of Legal Theory at Georgetown University Law Center. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Barnett.
Earlier today, I attended oral argument in the United States versus Kidabo case, which could be an interesting case or may not be an interesting case. We'll have to see. The Kidabo involved the failure of a former federal sex offender who was then in the military and prosecuted under military law to register, his failure to register with Texas authorities as was required by federal law. He had been a sex offender, and when he was in the service, he had consensual sex with a 15-year-old girl. He was prosecuted, sentenced to 3 months incarceration, and then discharged after that. And after his discharge was up, Congress passed a law which said that all federal sex offenders have to register as federal sex offenders or violate federal law. Because this law was enacted after Mr. Kidabo was discharged from his sentence and from all supervision of the court, it was challenged as unconstitutional on the grounds that Congress had no power under any of its enumerated powers to subject him to this requirement, this mandate, to register as a sex offender, and neither was it necessary and proper to any enumerated power that he should do so. I should just say that his constitutional challenge was denied at the trial court. It was denied by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, but then in an en banc review, the majority of the Fifth Circuit en banc reversed the panel that had upheld the constitutionality of this law and held that this was an unconstitutional application of this sex registry law to Mr. Kidabo, that because he had been completely discharged from federal jurisdiction, Congress did not have the power under the Necessary and Proper Clause to impose upon him a mandate to register as a sex offender. So, what will this mean? If the Fifth Circuit decision is upheld, it will be one of the few cases in which the court found that Congress had exceeded both its enumerated powers and whatever powers the Necessary and Proper Clause may give it to execute its enumerated powers. And that would put it in a very small list of very important cases in which the court has found a limit, found that Congress transgressed that limit, and declared that that law or the application of that law was unconstitutional. So that could be a very big deal, even though the situation is very unlikely to arise again in the future. In fact, it only applies to people who are convicted of military personnel or convicted of sex offenses during a hiatus, during a period in which they'd been fully discharged before this law was passed. So it only applies to a very few number of people. But it will be a very important constitutional principle to reinforce the enumerated power scheme. On the other hand, if the imposition on Mr. Kidabo is sustained, then that could, depending on how the opinion is written, represent an expansive reading of the Necessary and Proper Clause, as was urged by the government below, be adopted, although the government has substantially changed its position up above. And that would be bad. However, the dissenters below and the government also contend that the Fifth Circuit en banc panel has actually misconstrued or misinterpreted the status that Mr. Kidabo had. And in fact, he had not been completely and utterly discharged from federal jurisdiction. And so if the court were to take that position and find that he had not been completely discharged from federal jurisdiction, then none of these big constitutional implications would happen. It would neither be as a constitutional matter an expansion of the necessary and proper clause, nor as a constitutional matter, obviously, would it be a drawing of a limit to the necessary and proper clause. Sort of the reason why this might be a big constitutional case would simply disappear. And so there is always that possibility that this case will end up not being a big deal simply because of how the Supreme Court treats whether or not he was completely discharged from federal jurisdiction. So today was oral argument. And so the first thing that I was very interested in seeing was how interested were the justices in this safety valve or this out for them, which is the argument that he was never completely discharged from federal jurisdiction, and for that reason they don't really have to reach the big constitutional question. It was just easily constitutional to change his terms of his sentence to include this registration requirement. And I would have to say that my reading of the panel of the court today was they were not all that interested in this. A few perfunctory questions about that issue were asked near the end of both advocates' arguments, as though the court was basically saying, in one case it was Justice Ginsburg saying, you made this argument, tell us more about it, nearly at the end of the time. So it certainly did not constitute the bulk of what the justices were concerned about today, which is not to say that they might not use this as an out once they decide whether or not they can reach the constitutional merits quite easily. But it didn't look like they were looking for this out. And so that was quite significant. That was probably the most significant thing I got out of oral argument today, was thinking that the court is actually going to reach the merits of the constitutional argument. It was very difficult for me to tell from the argument today how the court might turn out. Clearly, Justice Scalia was very skeptical of whether it was constitutional for Congress to reassert jurisdiction over this person just because they had once been convicted of a federal crime in the military. There was no doubt where I think he was going. Chief Justice Roberts similarly seemed skeptical of this, but there were other questions that he asked which suggested that maybe, you know, he was asking skeptical questions of both sides. But there was no doubt that, for example, he questioned the government's lawyer and said that the government is not relying. Wouldn't the government's argument apply to anybody who had ever been convicted of a federal crime? It wasn't limited to military, for example. And he also pressed the government on whether the government's Commerce Clause theory, which also exists in the case, would not apply to persons who had ever crossed state lines. So it was clear that Justice Roberts was somewhat concerned about an overbroad reading of the Necessary and Proper Clause. And also, it was also reasonably clear that he saw the Comstock case, which he had voted for in the majority of that case, and had joined Justice Breyer's opinion in that case. It was also clear that he saw the Comstock case as limited and not really necessarily justifying the expansion of power that had taken place here, which was also interesting. On the other hand, you know, obviously Justice Thomas doesn't ask questions, and I got no sense of him. Justice Alito looked like he might be trying to figure out, I mean, he clearly asked the government to explain what was the connection between this exertion of power and an enumerated power, to walk him through the connections. The advocate got somewhat interrupted while he was trying to do that, so I don't know if Justice Alito got the answer to the question he was looking for, but that was a question that seemed either to indicate that Justice Alito had doubts about whether this was an extension of power that went too far, or was actually just wanting the government to trace the steps so that he himself could identify those as the steps, and if there were the proper steps there, as there were, he found in Comstock, he would have no problem upholding this as a exercise of the necessary and proper clause. So that was really unclear what his questioning meant. And Justice Kennedy's only real question, he asked very little today, concerned whether, in fact, the doctrine of constitutional avoidance might be used to get out from under having to decide this case, perhaps through some kind of interpretation of the statute. So it suggested that he saw a problem, or he wouldn't be appealing to constitutional avoidance, but not necessarily that he saw this problem as incurable. And other than that, he didn't really say very much. Justice Sotomayor was actually reasonably skeptical of the government's claim, and Justice Kagan asked some skeptical questions of the government's claim. And I wouldn't draw any inferences from those questions, although they were good ones. And Justice Breyer sort of laid his cards on the table during his questioning, because his concern was that the arguments that were being made against this exercise of the military power might somehow restrict the exercise of the Commerce Clause, which, according to Justice Breyer, would be somewhere that we definitely did not want to go. So he was very concerned that there might be some extension of this limitation on the Necessary and Proper Clause that would carry over to the Commerce Clause, which is something he was opposed to having happen. So that pretty much sums up what happened today, and I would just suggest that anyone who, like some of the reporters in the room, who actually left the hearing after the announcement of the decision and came back for the second argument, thinking this argument and this case was not going to be significant, they may have miscalculated, because given the fact that the justices didn't seem to be interested in an out and were all worried about the actual merits of the constitutional claim here, this could end up being a big case either way it goes, either because it becomes one of the small number of cases in which the court does find that Congress has exceeded its power under the enumerated powers scheme as enhanced by the Necessary and Proper Clause, or alternatively, because the court upholds this, notwithstanding the fact that it seems to be a pretty broad expansion of federal power, which ultimately includes the power to mandate people do things. In this case, it was mandate people register as sex offenders just because they once were within federal jurisdiction. That would be a very broad reading of federal power and would bring the court sort of back into ballpark of mandates again, the ballpark they visited prior to this in the Affordable Care Act case.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.